win friends influence people.
Hello, welcome to the big show. This is the show that really pissed off all the Brexit morons the other week, and I think we're going to piss off all the vegetarians before the end of the show as well. Starting us off, top left, first vegetarian, Chris Campion.
Evening.
How was that vegetable curry, sir?
That vegetable curry was amazing tonight. Despite the stick that I got for it, it was amazing.
With masala chips.
Masala chips as well. Beautiful.
So what do they do? Do they coat them or afterwards or before? Or
I have no idea. I order them, the man cooks it, I collect it, and I come home and eat it. It's nice.
So you're not worried in the mechanics?
No, I'm not too worried at all. There's plenty of curry shops here. I don't know exactly how they constructed that meal. But Prashad's in Leeds is amazing.
So you're sitting there munching away on your masala chips in inverted commas, and actually they're coated in roach droppings.
Yes, possibly, but they're nice.
Okay, nice roast droppings. Welcome back, mate. Congratulations on the birth.
Thank you. Yeah, and little Seth arrived, coming 3 weeks on Monday.
And has your hypochondriac wife finished now?
No, she's still not a well lady at all.
She's milking that for all it's worth, isn't she?
I wish that were the case. He's great. My daughter's doing really well. She just needs a little bit more looking after for a few more weeks, and hopefully we'll get her fixed.
I'm joking, of course, before anyone writes in.
I'll let her listen back.
No, for Christ's sake, she'll never come here again. Prognosis is good, it's just a case of time, I take it.
We think so. We've not really got a clear idea of exactly what's caused it, but from it looks like it's muscular and ligament damage as a result of labour, and fingers crossed a few more weeks of rest, maybe some physio, looking at some things like acupuncture, hopefully a combination, we'll get a fix and back up and working again.
And talking of no idea what's really causing it, Jeff Gammon. Who's frozen? Who's gone? I've upset him that badly. Well, I've never delivered a one-liner and had that happen.
Oh, he's back.
You thought you'd hang up and ruin my joke, didn't you?
I totally missed your whole joke.
Oh, see, I knew he'd done that deliberately.
Skype took a dirt nap on me.
I can edit, don't worry. How you doing, Jeff?
I'm doing well, and I'm sorry I ruined whatever your joke was.
It was at your expense, so no, you're not. What have you been up to? You've been building your Ghostbusters thing.
Yeah.
see it in the background.
On the shelf behind me, yep. And been working on an idea. I know, totally surprising. Working on an idea for a new podcast.
Oh, right, really? Just in case you weren't on enough.
Right. So I'll be able to talk about that soon.
A podcast that Jeff can talk about. not missing from my life, I have to say.
Well, you know, it depends on what circle I'm in, which show I can talk about.
Right, okay, definitely. And last but by no means least, here in the studio.
Oh, sorry, me.
The man himself on the webcam. He sat down now, so he's not in the shot anymore. Just tilt it down a bit. Oh, I could do that actually, but I'm not going to. Muller, how you doing, mate?
Hello. Am I in shop now?
Yeah.
Thank you. I'm fine, mate.
Good, excellent.
Upsetting people.
Upsetting Anders in the chat room talking about vegetarian stuff, which Anders is still typing. It's not good. The Week in Tech, the big stories that have got on. I thought I'd start because I've got a story here that I picked up on Slashdot. And I thought it might start an interesting bit of a discussion or debate. Basically, Australia has got a mandatory census system, which is the same as it is in the UK, although they've got mandatory voting as well as. And it's due to come up in the next few weeks. But privacy campaigners have advocated that people have a mass boycott of the census that's coming up. The Australian government response has been to try and calm fears by promising that it's securing the data correctly and keeping personally identifiable data separate from statistical data, and it will be used in a responsible way But the privacy people are saying, you know, you can't gather this much information and store it without giving us assurances that it really is beyond just a there, yes, we honestly are. We want to see some hard facts about this. If you don't take part in the census and you're in Australia, then you'll be fined $1,800 for failure to do it and $180 per day thereafter.
Holy crap.
Wow.
That's Australian dollars, so it's like 20 pence. But
oh, okay.
No, I'm joking. I think it's about 2-1 on the pound, or what it used to be anyway. So that's about £900 and about 90 quid a day. So $120 and $1,500. There you go. But I thought that was quite an interesting thing in that, you know, people are exercising their right to protest. They don't like the fact that, you know, governments are pissing people off by storing too much data, by, you know, the just because you can doesn't mean you should kind of problems. And I just, the other thing is as well that these governments creating honeypots. They're creating these massive databases of identifiable individuals with data that could, if they go into the wrong hands. And government's not good at data storage, is it? It's not good at assist computer systems. I mean, you know, they've just abandoned the National NHS database, and that's costing like $40 million a day or something to not finish it. So it's just a question there. So, you know, is there... Is it right for the Australian people to go, you know what, you're not having my data because I don't trust you with it anymore?
Yeah, of course it is.
Yeah, definitely.
And I have no problem with that at all.
Well, yeah, because you're not Australian, you're not the one that's withholding it, but I mean...
Oh, that's true, yeah, but still.
You've got significant issues, haven't you, with...
Why don't the Australian people just fill out the form, but just not put the true information in it?
I think that would be an offence as well, surely.
I'm sure that would be an offence.
Yeah.
Yeah. I can't see that working. But I don't know how you go about dealing with this, though, because that's the real problem of it, is the fact that it's... everything that you do to protest it will be illegal.
That's the trouble with the Australian government. A few things they've done lately have been a bit, shall we say, right-wing. And I think there's been one or two things that have made me raise my eyebrows when I've heard what they're planning on doing. And I think they've got some politicians over there who are a bit totalitarian, shall we say.
All right, okay.
That's my feeling. It's just one or two things about the way they treat the internet. And some of the edicts you see sometimes come down. But
I think one part of this one, Ewan, is we spoke on a show a few months ago about when the snoopers charter in Britain, obviously that's landing, and all of the data that's going to be held centrally. And one of the key pieces of information we talked about back then was around... you only need one system to hack and all your information's out. So I think what the Australians are doing here, I think it's the way that it's mandatory and fined for people who are not taking part or who don't take part. I think that's a real key point on one side. But I think the biggest issue here, as you touched on, is absolutely about how data can be, now it can be kept secure. And I don't see how they can do that. I think most companies seem, in one way or another, to struggle with convincing people that data is 100% secure.
Well, you're never going to get 100% secure. Yeah. So that's...
No.
That I don't know if that's been a bit... raising the expectation too far. We've got Windrider in the chat room, is Australian, and he's saying it's $180 today. It's Tuesday night that it happens. There's a campaign to do just that, Muller, to work against the government, and a bit totalitarian isn't even close, so it's obviously further than that.
I follow a lot of their politics because I got family over there, and honestly, mate, some of the stuff that's coming out of the Australian government at the moment makes our government look like the Labour Party. It's absolutely abysmal.
Are we talking fascism here?
I'll tell you what, it's not far off.
Or socialism? Because both of them are equally oppressive, just for different reasons.
They just seem to... I don't know what it is about... Winrodig might be able to comment on the chat room, but they seem to be very yes or no. Everything's black and white. There doesn't seem to be any shades of grey over there. They seem to be a little bit reactionary. That's just a view from the outside, personally, but...
Well, no, I mean, according to Windrider, you're on the money. And Windrider, type some more stuff and tell us more about this and we'll read it out, because I'm only reading off a very simple Slashdot story. But I just thought it raises the question that if your government, you know, and there's snooping issues with the FBI in the US, and I'm sure there's stuff with GCHQ here as well, where there's preying on data and that kind of stuff, and as you say, the snooper's charter, but if you can't manage that much data and that flow of data, the NSA were talking about the amount that they gather and that kind of, weren't talking about it, but people were saying, that Snowden was saying, you can't manage that much data without there being some digital form of storage that then becomes massively insecure as an option. Yeah. And there isn't a way around that, because as much as you want to say you want it to be 100% secure, it can't be. Once it's on a computer that's connected to the internet, it cannot be 100% de facto secure. It's got to be 100% secure if it's in a room and it's locked away and it's got no data in or out. And that's not going to deal with it, is it?
I have suspicions then around how the government is going to use elements of this data. They're going to use it, I would expect that they're going to use it or try to make money out of it in one way or another, possibly in an anonymous way, selling information onto various companies around Australia in terms of how the Australian public do this, do that, health, age, and all the rest of it. But as soon as they start doing that, one, that the risks open up of losing more data than they're probably expected to give away. But two, then there's the whole trust around it's been my data's been sold without my permission. So is there an underlying reason why the Australian government want all this data? I can't see anything in this article to explain why they're doing this.
I think the sale of the data is an interesting one there, because you know Uber is making more money off selling the data than it is off the cabs themselves. So
yeah,
by some distance. So the data, the big data question is massive. Any thoughts? Why does it? So the Macs have got an ability to switch on the updates available thing the second that someone starts talking. I'm sure.
Hold on, let me just reach up there and tap that for you, Ewan.
What's it? Tap that. Does he know what that means in England?
Oh wait, it's over here.
Yeah, it's gone now. Go on, Jeff. You were right, sweet.
All right. So when I look at any government that wants to collect data on their citizens on this scale, I do get concerned. Even if the reasons for collecting that data seem benign, when you have that much information about a body of people, the potential for it to be stolen or abused in some ways extremely high. And so I'm kind of concerned about what Australia is doing here. And I mean, really, I have yet to find anyone that can show me any government around the world, anywhere in the world, that is truly competent at protecting data. And it seems in many cases, governments are very naive about data protection, and while they may have the best intention of keeping data safe, they are absolutely horrible at doing that. So a government that wants to collect as much data as they can en masse on their population and then is going to hold that data indefinitely, yeah, that seems like a problem to me.
There is no one on the planet that is good at data protection. Is that an incorrect statement?
There's no government on the planet that I think is really good at data protection.
The only way to stay safe is to stay off the net completely, to completely remove yourself from the digital life. That is the only possible way that you can ever be 100% safe. There's no other way around it.
No.
The second that you buy a new computer and you plug it into an Ethernet port, boom, you're tracked.
Well, let's say you get a driver's license or a credit card. You're now in a computer database. You're now tracked. And that information, even if you have no account with any service anywhere online, you're now susceptible to some form of hacking.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I can't. I mean, we should go back to the old records office where... The British Records Office used to actually physically keep the bits of paper, and then they'd just look through them and go, one, tally, two, tally, three, tally. Someone actually sat and counted it. Sheaves and sheaves of paper and rows of desks like a Bolting Brothers movie. That's what we need.
Well, it was kept on microfiche.
All right, mate. And we all know how secure fish are.
That's right. You know, so when I had to update my driver's license and my registration for my car when I moved into the place that I'm in now, shortly after that, the amount of very targeted junk mail that I started to get was just like off the charts. And before that, I had kept my address as someone else's address instead of my own, and I was fine. But in the United States, it's very easy for-profit companies to harvest our personal information from the government and then use it for their own uses and resell that to other people. And that's exactly what's happened. My personal information for my driver's license and my car registration have been bought and sold several times, and the amount of ridiculous yet targeted junk mail I get because of that is crazy.
I've got a bit of an input here. I've just checked on Google, and according to Google, it's illegal in the US not to reply to the census.
It's illegal in nearly every country.
Title 13, Section 221, a refusal or neglect to answer questions or false answers to the New United States Code. Basically, you can be fined £100, $100, sorry. And people who knowingly do it,
£500. Right.
Yeah. And there are people that are more than happy to pay $500 for the privilege of not telling the government something.
Yeah, but then you'd be asked to do it.
Anders has just typed in the chat room.
I know, I just seen it.
Oh, I've landed me a big one.
I had a feeling he was doing that, but
I had to pour water on the reel. It was spinning so fast.
I'll tell you what, it was. I knew he was taking a mic, but I was too scared.
And he's put down, Campion Patrice, gentlemen, that's how it's done.
I bow to you, Andy. Just looking down at you, in the buried in a couple of links down from the original article that you posted.
Yes.
It says, consider the widespread use of stock standard security questions. Obviously, these are things that would be documented in something so detailed as a census. And he says, so your security questions around the internet. So what street you grew up on, your mother's maiden name, the name of your first school, all this information, generally speaking, will be captured in a census. You're putting all of your stock security questions around the internet in one place.
Yeah, I mean, that's
convenient.
One of the other things that's in a link that Muller's found is that people have been asked to type no religion on there by a Christian group. So it makes Australia appear as a Muslim country, a Muslim denomination, because that would be the majority hoarding there. And I thought there'd be an interesting, that's to a certain degree how others view your country could depend on trade agreements, could depend on flight risks and acceptance of people through immigration and that kind of thing, or emigration. And skewing your census data could actually have quite serious ramifications globally, because your country now becomes perceived as something that it actually isn't.
Actually, it's illegal in this country, isn't it? £1,000 if you don't fill it out.
Yeah, okay, thanks. Yeah, I mean, do you want to skew your country's data? Do you want to make it into something that it isn't?
Yeah, well, yeah, a census is used to determine how tax dollars are distributed for various services, to a degree, and to make sure that public services are representing the population. So, yeah, it's a tough place to be, because giving accurate information on a census helps ensure that the services that you're paying for are representing your community. But on the other side of that, you have the whole thing with, well, now you've provided all this very personal information to a government database, and it can be used in many ways without your consent.
Yeah. I think there's a lot of questions to be answered here, definitely. And I don't think government has got it all figured out. I think Theresa's sitting on the snooper's charter and emboldening it because I think she actually needs it. That's fair enough. You know, the government is saying it needs it as a security feature. Okay, I'll give them some credence to that. But how it's actually implemented and who's storing the data and how secure that data storage is and who's paying for it, those are all big questions now that aren't answered across all governments, across all, the whole world.
Mm. Yeah, but now she's a prime minister. Do you think she might just tuck that away and say to Amber Rudd, your problem?
I don't know, because I think Amber Rudd, to a certain degree, is implementing the policy from her prime minister as well as. It's not just that she's not got the total call on the Home Office.
But a lot of this stuff came down from Cameron, though, didn't it? And you can see a few U-turns coming now. And I wonder if that was one that came down from Cameron and co. And May was just the brunt.
Time will tell.
We'll see. She's already U-turning on a few things already.
Well, I think as well, she's gone about, we're definitely going with Brexit. And I don't think she's got any intention of seeing us out on Brexit either, because I think there'll be another referendum. There'll be a reason why we can't do it instantly. And I think it's so complicated that you could see us 10 years from now and we still haven't triggered Article 50 because we can't reach preliminary agreement. So I can see it all falling apart rapidly. Good. Who's got the next story?
There you go.
Camps is straight in there. He's only been away a couple of weeks, but look, he's back in with a vengeance.
And it ready.
China has built an elevated bus.
Yeah, so this story's been around for a few years that China have been talking about doing this. It seems that they've only gone and done it. So they've essentially built a prototype of the transit elevated bus. So this is a bus that essentially spans the road. 72 feet long, 25 feet wide. It can span multiple lanes of traffic. It runs essentially on a set of tracks at 40 miles an hour.
It looks like a tram, really, I suppose.
Essentially a huge tram.
Yeah, sort of like a tunnel on wheels.
Yeah, the bridge is the road, and cars can just drive down the road as they normally would. And this spans straight over the top of them. Don't know what happens as soon as they get to a taller lorry or something like that. I don't know if they have to create separate roads for tall vehicles. But this thing can, a single unit can transport 300 passengers. Apparently they can daisy chain and link several of them together. There's some videos on the links within the article. But I just thought this looks like a really interesting idea. I think if anybody can do this, China probably can. Be good to see how they implement something, particularly when you're talking that there's, I think I've read 20 million new cars expected on the roads in China within the next 12 months. And the growth rate in vehicle sales is just ginormous. And basically the transport system as it currently is in China can't cope. It's only going to get worse. So alternative ideas need to be developed. And this is going to be a hell of a lot cheaper than tube systems.
I can see a problem.
Go on.
Well, if you want to turn left or right, or you are in the process and get stuck, well, this thing just drives straight over you.
I see this working a bit like a tram.
Yeah,
it's essentially it's a tram. There's going to be stopping points, and there'll be some sort of traffic light type system when this thing isn't going to move, so cars can go. It's got to work on things like that.
Yeah, that makes sense. Otherwise, you will have stupid people that decide to make a left turn while the bus is over them.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is as well, the load capacity on this thing's 300 passengers. So a typical bus maxed out in the UK will be about 70 people, and there's myriads of them going places because they go different routes.
Yep.
So this is going to be a mass transit route. This is going to be more like a supplementary train than a supplementary bus service, surely.
Yeah, I think you're right.
That
makes sense.
An urban train, almost.
Yeah, maximum speed is 40 miles per hour, making it pretty speedy in a mode of public transport. You can just see yourself sitting, can't you, with your heavy metal on or some 70s rock band blaring out in your car, and this thing, you don't hear it coming, and it just goes woof over the top of you.
I think that's, well, all the cars are sat still. This thing just glides straight over the top of them.
Yeah, and everyone poops their pants.
It's going to be awesome.
I could see some accidents in this. I really can.
I think this is a great concept.
It's a good idea.
I don't know if it's just a proof. Is it a proof of concept, or is this something that's financially viable, though?
Whether it's financially viable or not, I'm not sure. It's been in design apparently for about 3 or 4 years. This is now a working concept that has launched, and it has traveled. And they're from a couple of the articles that I've read on this, it looks like by the end of this year they want to have them in use. So it doesn't seem like they're too far away from it.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, no. I've just looked at pictures of the inside, and it to say it's Spartan is an understatement.
Yeah, a lot of space in there.
There's a lot of space, but what I'm thinking is this thing, if you're calling it a bus, then you're suggesting it's essentially road going. And, you know, with the way that roads are and the fact that you've got human driver vehicles around you, then this thing may want to stop suddenly, and there's nothing there. There's hardly any seats, and you know, and it's not as compressed and as compact as a tube train where you've got some support and something to grab onto on either side. There could be an awful lot of people in the spaces around those seats there that have nothing to hold on to.
Yeah, what could possibly go wrong?
I think that's quite interesting.
China.
It's China, so they obviously believe that their population are disposable, so...
Oh, by the time you've got 300 people in there, which there will be every single time they open the doors, there'll be no room to fall because there'll be so many people crammed in. It's like when you travel on the Central Line in London in rush hour. There's no chance you're going to fall over because you're packed in that tight.
So what you want to do is go to the tail end of this thing. So if it has to stop quickly and everything moves forward, you have 299 other people that become your shock absorber. People at the front end of the bus get killed. People at the tail end, they're fine.
Yeah, that'd be good. Your own cushioning.
Yeah.
Yeah. Definitely going to happen then.
Apparently so.
A friend was telling me the other week that someone he met had dinner with Sergey Brin, and... Sergey Brin was saying the problem with China is that they've stopped copying and they've started creating, and that's the scary part, because you know they're America's chucking like 1 in 50 college entrances engineering, the other 49 are law, and in China it's the opposite way around.
Wow,
and that's pretty impressive.
Yeah, I mean it looks there's like I said when you go on the links, there's a few little video clips in there. It does look impressive. It's not moving anywhere near the 40 mile an hour that they talk about, but there is some animations in there as well. It does look impressive. If they can get this working and get it on some main commuter routes, it'd be interesting to see how it picks up and if it's adopted anywhere else.
Yeah.
My guess is that it gets adopted anywhere else, it will be in cities where... they're flat, because driving one of these things up a hill without any real seating system, you're going to have all those people sliding down towards the tail end.
Yeah, I think, like I said, I think this is mass transit. This is big routes. It's not like a bus service, not by any stretch.
Right.
Yeah. Good story, mate. Good story. Jeff, what's yours?
My story is Instagram stories, and excuse me, and I picked this, well, first I should describe what Instagram stories is. It's a new feature in Instagram where your photos and videos, instead of being persistent, expire after 24 hours and then just disappear, and you can string them together so that, you know, like if you're at an event, all the photos and videos from an event will just be there in this one little group. And then after 24 hours, they just disappear from your stream. Now, if this sounds kind of like Snapchat, because it's a clone of Snapchat. And Instagram is not even trying to candy coat it and say that they've come up with this interesting and clever way to let us share our photos and videos in a transient fashion or a more ephemeral fashion. They're just coming right out and saying, yeah, so this is what Snapchat did, and now we're doing it too. And I find that interesting.
Yeah.
And I'm curious if Snapchat is going to have any way to or any sort of recourse.
Who owns Snapchat?
Snapchat, I believe, is its own thing right now. Whereas Instagram is owned by Facebook.
Yeah, no, I was sitting trying to think who owns Instagram, but you might be right.
Yeah, Instagram is definitely part of Facebook. So they have the backing to pretty much do whatever they want. But Snapchat, I'm not sure.
Just a quick Google search here. It looks like Snapchat is still owned by its original founder. And they looks like they turned down an offer from Facebook for $3 billion. I've heard of that. Don't know when exactly that was.
Well, then in that case, it totally makes sense why they just rolled their own version right into Instagram.
That's a three-year-old article, is that one, but $3 billion offer from Facebook turned down by Snapchat's owners.
Why?
So, yeah, and it looks like they're still privately held.
Yeah.
All right. Mm. Well, so seeing what Instagram has done, I think they're actually doing it better than Snapchat, which is bad news for Snapchat. So if Instagram can draw over the demographic that has gravitated towards Snapchat, this is really bad news for Snapchat. But they're not the same demographic, so I'm not sure if they'll really be able to do that, which would make completely copying Snapchat a way to keep current users from migrating over that direction.
See, Facebook have done this before, haven't they? I mean, the mm-hmm. Jabber, who kind of did a little link up with us for a while, they abandoned it because Facebook did a video streaming service that was coming, and it was like walk away, and they just dropped this. You know, they were with us 1 week, and then they were gone the next week, and they just said we're done because Facebook started this thing. They've just copied us.
Of course,
there's a lot of stuff that large companies just gone boom, we're doing it, and you know, the little folk. Snapchat should have taken the $3 billion clearly now, because this is a killer move.
It is. Yeah, now, but it isn't just the big guys that do the copying. Snapchat totally copied Instagram's image storage feature.
Mm-hmm.
And they did that just recently. So this is coming from both sides. But yeah, with Instagram doing a blatant, very openly blatant ripoff of what Snapchat is, I don't think that bodes well for Snapchat in the long term.
I think you hit the nail on the head a few minutes ago, Jeff, when you said that the user groups. I think Snapchat and Instagram have got... There's people who use both, absolutely. But I think mm-hmm. they aim at different age groups of people out there. I think Instagram's probably bridged right from young to old, as is Facebook, as we know. But Snapchat, I see it's quite at the younger end of the market, and mm-hmm. I think the UI is quite complicated in Snapchat. I think Instagram's got a way better UI, and I think that it'll almost separate. I think it'll give Instagram users the functionality, but I'm not sure it will draw people away from Snapchat.
Yeah, I don't know if it'll draw them away either.
It's where your friends are.
Mm.
I mean, that's the thing is, you know, your social media lives and dies and is creative and is successful based on where your friends are.
True. If you're the only person there, it's not much of a social network.
I can't even remember the name of the service, Hello or whatever it was that they signed up for. And there was one that charged $20 for the year to be Twitter, but with people who wanted to be there. You know, it was the Geeks platform.
Which one was that?
I don't know. I hope they're still not charging me $20. But it was shit.
Yeah.
I mean, it was just you're in there, and it was like watching tumbleweed. And I've got to say, there's a certain element as well where I'm not lost, but you know, I get up in the morning and I go for my morning motion and I take my phone with me and I start scanning through all the social media. And when I've read all the messages, that's the time to finish up and go. And it's without that stimulus, you know, especially this week I've been on my own, without that stimulus to kind of think about, oh, what should I talk about? What should I say? I don't find that, this is going to sound like I'm real sad and I can't exist without social media, but it does play a big part in my life to speak to you guys and to interact with people in the chat room and talk to my friends online.
Absolutely.
It's not a substitute for real life, but it is a big part of my life.
I think where your friends are, it's a really, really good point, because I know that if Wrighty was here now, what he would say about his daughter is that she's no interest in Facebook. She's no interest in Facebook because that's where her mum and dad are, but she's all over Snapchat. And I think where your friends are is will ultimately be where people which platform that they move to and they stay on.
Yeah, no, that would be interesting. It's not going to fail though because it's Facebook.
Of course.
Right. Yeah. Worst case scenario is they just kill the feature.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's
which they do on a regular basis.
Yeah.
And it's driving me crazy trying to remember what that other social network was that we had to pay for.
Elo. ELLO.
Oh, it was Elo?
I think so. I don't know. I keep getting emails from them saying, come back. And I keep trying to look for an unsubscribe button.
Yeah, good luck.
Yeah. I mean, Windrider was on there, so we all know what it was. Except he's gone, I think, now. Or is he back?
Since yeah, I was on whatever it was as well, and very quickly decided to cancel my my monthly subscription. And I'm like, well, but now you're only going to be able to have 50 friends. And, okay, I'll cope.
Yeah, Muller, what's your story?
I sent you the link.
I put it in.
Yeah. Okay, my story is basically.
Close to your mouth. There's a good chat.
Sorry, my story doesn't just link to the O2 story that's in the room. My story is that the fact that there are fewer people buying phones and renewing their phones because there's no real reason to, is that I think we've got to the top of the chain and now it's small increments and there's not that big a incentive these days to change our phones. And we've also, when you look at phones these days, we don't want to fill our landfill, so we're all recycling our phones more and we're all hanging on to a bit longer. And also, due to Brexit and other things, we're hanging on to our phones because we can't afford to change them. And that's basically my story. That O2 aren't the only one who are going to suffer. I think one or two of the other carriers are going to suffer, and I think it's going to be worldwide, personally.
Yeah, I mean, he's saying that this is Brexit adjusted. There's still a decline. It's not just the Brexit effect. No,
I know. I think it's down to the fact that the technology has reached a point now where phones are incremental. They're not big leaps. But 1995, you had an N95, and then you had an iPhone, and then you had a better Nokia, and then you had another phone, and then we've got to the stage now where...
Yeah, the N95 was a staggering leap forward, wasn't it? In the Symbian OS, and then you had the iPhone jumped in immediately after that.
Mm-hmm.
So there were staggering changes, and I think I agree. I mean, I think the if you look at the Windows phone line, I think they're actually going backwards with that. You know, they're great phones, don't get me wrong. I still love the Windows interface, and I still love what they do with the phones. But you look at the groundbreaking that they made with the 1020, and now it's just all come back to, you know, a bit safe, really. You know, they haven't gone with the camera in the same way. And I'm sitting looking at my iPhone, knowing that I'm due an upgrade potentially in September. I've already managed to pitch the... 6 to Sharon saying you'll love it. And I'm going to get a 7, but I don't know if I am. I'm still undecided. Whereas, you know, a year ago it was a no-brainer.
Yeah.
Is the cell market dead? Have we hit the Moore's law of cell phones? An expiry of it.
It's not dead because more and more people are abandoning traditional landlines in favor of mobile phones. So there are always new potential customers for smartphones. But I think that a lot of people are in that position now where upgrading to a new phone every single year just isn't something that they feel they can do. So I think that's one of the big reasons why we saw T-Mobile in the United States start doing the thing where you can buy a phone, it's very clear how much the phone costs on your bill, and after you have paid it off, your bill goes down, or after a year, you can give the phone back and get the new model. And it looks like in the United States, that's the way to get people to keep buying new phones.
The trouble is, I think we're a different people. We all, everyone on this network would buy the best phone available, either Android or Windows or iPhone. But I think there's an awful lot of people out there who just, it's a phone. My wife is quite happy with a feature phone.
Yeah.
Her last phone cost me £15. Brand new. SIM free.
Well, that's the only way, that was the only phone that could fit in the cupboard space that you leave her to live in. Under the stairs.
It's the only one I could get under the crack of the door.
Right, there we go. Without having to take the bad luck off. Muller has got a wife, by the way. I haven't seen her. I've only, for, what, 4 years
That's
now?
Because still apparently she's her. Locked in a cabinet.
I've seen alleged pictures of her.
Yeah. Well, I do have a sort of German background, so she's locked in a... So I've bricked her into the cellar.
There might be people in West Midlands police taking that seriously. It's not true. Okay.
No. He didn't use bricks. It's just boards.
No, a lot of them. I met her before she went mad. Sorry, I better not say this.
Swamp Rat says he's got a $15 L. Save you, mate. Swamp Rat says he's got a $15 LG flip phone. Does all I need a phone to do? It makes and receives the occasional phone call.
Yeah. And it's waterproof in the swamp.
Yeah, I think does the iPhone take calls yet now or not?
I think mine has taken a couple lately, but not many.
Yeah.
Oh, well. I think the cycle, the 2 year TikTok cycle, I think we'll see that change. I think that's going to move to probably at least a 3 year cycle.
No, it can't. European Union said it's 2 years, and they can't change it unless we come out of Europe.
No, you're talking about the warranty upgrade. Yeah. You're talking about the general upgrade.
You're talking about...
No, they cannot... The contract length is 2 years. You can look it up if you want.
No, not the contract length. Yeah, the updating the cycle of the phone. So
he's not talking about contract.
That's what I'm on about. Contract length is 2 years. So the 2 years is when you can upgrade your phone.
No, we're not talking about contract. He's not talking about that.
I'm Googling.
No one disbelieves you, Muller. You're just talking about something completely different.
Okay.
You're talking about contract lengths. He's talking about natural cycles.
Oh, sorry. I apologize. Yeah,
there we go.
The hardware upgrade cycle.
Periods.
Can be completely independent of your contract.
Because now Camps is in touch with his feminine side.
Oh, right, yeah.
He's talking about periods of update. Yeah, there we go.
So I think this is going to move more to rather than the 12 and the 24 month, more probably towards the 18 and the 36 month TikTok cycle for devices. I don't think as many people are going to upgrade. I think the second-hand market will probably increase significantly over the next couple of years, because me personally, I'm using a 6 at the minute. I use a 6S for work. I do see a clear difference between the two devices. I'm going to change my own 6 to a 7. I'll sell my 6, and I know I'll still get a decent amount back for it. And I'll buy it as a one-off device. I'm not interested in moving into a contract. I'll stick with my rolling SIM only plan. And actually, by doing it that way, I'm not throwing the full £600-700 out on a phone. I'll probably get the best part, I don't know, maybe £400-500 for my 6. And it's going to cost me probably at somewhere in the region of £300 for a 7, and I'll run that for 2 years. And I think that more people will start doing things like that, or just hang on to them for until almost it comes probably half to three quarters of the way through Apple's support cycle, and actually then you start seeing functionality not work quite as well as it used to do. Yeah. I still see plenty of people with 4S's. Fives.
Yeah, no, I mean, I nearly talked Ellis into a 5. I did talk him into a 5, into the SE, which is a 5 effectively, isn't it? But with 6
components. No, it's a 6.
No, it's a 5 body with a 6 components.
Yes, you're right.
Yeah. So I nearly talked him into that, and he was getting towards being. He wasn't happy, but I caved in the end. But
you know, I know a lot of people that. Well, that's not fair. I know a handful of people that have 6S pluses, and when the SE came out, they switched because they really preferred that smaller screen.
Yeah. There is a time I look at mine and think it's very large, but then I haven't done myself any favors because I've got it on a Mophie Juice Pack, so it's.
My wife's still using a 5S, and when I talked about when I changed mine to probably to the 7 and said that I'll just give you my iPhone 6, she said, I don't want it. It's too big. I do not want that phone. So I think what I'll probably do is sell the 6 and then just buy her the 5SE at that point, because it's the size of the phone that was more of interest to her.
Yeah, I think the only thing I'll say with the 5SE, I know it is a better phone, don't get me wrong, but I still think they've got the pricing a little bit high on it, because it was only £80 more for me to get a 6S for a less. Mm-hmm. That's kind of stupid.
Yeah.
Bit dumb. And we're not an Apple show either, so moving on.
Well, we're talking about phones, not Apple.
Yeah, no, we're talking about phones in general.
Yeah.
I think there is a fact that, you know, the Brexit pinch thing, I mean, we're getting a reduction in interest rates, aren't we, in the next couple of days. So.
Well, that's happened already, 0.25 now.
It'd be interesting to see how the pricing reflects on Apple products over here later on this year as new products come out.
Yeah, I speaking from photographic equipment, they've already gone up. Massively, and I think it's just people taking the piss. Though.
Yeah, I said that, they're taking a mickey, because those prices are well over.
Well, I went to one website today, and the camera that I'm looking to buy was £3,000 as opposed to £2,500. And but I went to another site that I've been to before, and it was still £2,199. So there's like an £800 difference across there that someone's just gone, oh, put it up.
Try your luck, yeah.
I'm not paying that. I can live without for that much. Yes. We've had some reviews. Thank you to those people that have bothered to leave us a review. We've got one here from Monster Munch, and he's put down, great tech news with a hint of sarcasm, great panel of contributors that don't take themselves too seriously. Good banter and lots of laughs. That's for the big show. Thank you very much. We don't get many for the big show, so if you are a big show listener, a regular big show listener, please, please, please get yourself into iTunes and leave us a review. And if you've got a review already, just change it, and we get credit for changing the reviews as well. Pushes us up in the iTunes charts and rankings and gives us much, much more exposure. So please do reviews in iTunes if you possibly can. It makes a world of difference to our rankings. Thanks to UK2 as well. They support us. I just turned the Mac show. I said, you know, last week, oh, we've announced them, and we've got another year with them, and it's going to be great because we've got one more year of being with UK2. It will take us up to 10 years. And I looked on the account yesterday because I signed up for something else to clear one of my own websites. And actually, they've signed us up for 7 years. So we're with UK2 for another 7 years. Thank you.
That's awesome.
They're great. Please tweet out how much you appreciate UK2 looking after us. And we're going to do, I think, a podcast with UK2. We're going to do the UK2 show. So it'll be questions and answers from you guys. And also, you know, how do I get this started? How do I buy that? What's this service? How does that service work? What do I do here? What do I do there? And also some advice from resident web experts. And hopefully we'll try and get Wheaters involved in that as well. So he'll give a bit
excellent
of perspective. So it should be
cool.
Good. I don't know whether I should have said that or not, but it's coming. And thanks to Hoya, they supported us by helping us out with the Mac Mini, and they've given us the glasses and all that kind of stuff for the studio. And please support them. All you've got to do to support Hoya is just send them a message at Hoya UK on Twitter and say thanks very much for supporting British Tech Network. But also, walk past your local opticians every time you go into any opticians and just open the door and say, excuse me, you stock Hoya lenses? And if they go no, you go, oh, shame, and shut the door. That's all you've got to do. Just walk away. That is
so say what a shame, as opposed to calling them really bad names and telling them they're stupid.
That's a shame, and walk away. That's it. Nothing else. Don't do anything else. Just walk and say, okay, do you stock Hoya lenses? And when they go no we don't, you go, oh, that's a shame, and walk away. Lost business because they don't do Hoya lenses, because they're the best lenses in the world. Right. Time for the cool things. Start us off, camps.
Okay, I've got two. I've got a quick one and then my proper pick. The quick one is Google's Doodles. So Google, as I'm sure everyone knows, on the front of the website, they have different doodles, different little animations right above the search bar. If you go to google.co.uk or .com, and they signify different events around the world. Well, right now they've got an Olympics doodle on there. But if you click on the link, it takes you to a series of mini games, 6 or 7 different mini games that you can play. So worth a look if you're anywhere near Google. It works both on the Android iOS app and on the browser. And then my actual pick there in the chat room is the TP-Link. It's the TLW710N. So the reason I got this, basically a pocket travel router, range extender, etc. So I ran a couple of hotels for work. It's probably going back about a month, 6 weeks ago now. And the hotel that I needed to stay in was great from a location because of where I was working that day. But in the rooms, no Wi-Fi. All I had was wired internet connection. I was there for 4 nights and I had my iPad with me. So obviously Ethernet, no good. So I ordered this on Prime. Plugged it in to the socket in the hotel room, plugged the Ethernet cable in, and straight away I have my own hotspot. Worked fantastically well, allowed me to connect my iPad straight onto the hotel's internet connection. It was free internet to the room, but it was only over cable. And it got me up and running in the room on my iPad. I just had to wait for Prime. So it was the following morning it arrived.
It does powered Ethernet as well, eh?
It does.
Yeah, very good.
Yeah, only £20. I actually only paid about £15 odd, so it has gone up a couple of pound since I bought mine. But yeah, if anybody stays in hotels and there is no Wi-Fi for whatever reason, or pretty poor Wi-Fi, but there is wired, give something like this a go.
Well, in the United States, same thing, $27.99.
About the same then, so it's not too bad.
Wow.
It's not too bad. $27 would be about £22, so we're getting a fraction cheaper, perhaps. But yeah, good.
Yeah, it works really well.
Still, I mean, under $30 for something like this, yeah, it's pretty good.
Very, very intuitive. It was pretty much plug and play, to be totally honest.
Cool, like that. Jeff, what have you got?
Oh, let me grab you a link. There we go.
Did we do your story?
Yeah, we did my story. Yeah, yeah. It was Instagram. Okay, so my pick today, I'm giving you this pick so you can prepare because it's coming this fall and it's not going to be cheap. I'm sure of that. And this is one of the LEGO Ideas winners, and it is a Saturn V rocket where all of the separate modules actually come apart so you can pull apart each stage and look at the engines inside the stages, and then it has the lunar excursion module inside the cone piece, and then you have the command module and the whole thing comes apart, and it's an amazing model. And the prototype designs look just awesome. And this thing is going to be, I think it's like a little over a meter tall when it's built.
Yep.
And I'm really looking forward to this.
A meter tall is the size that kind of the Airfix, plastic models are, the glue together jobs.
Okay. So about the same size, but all Lego. Yeah.
And just short of 1,200 bricks.
That's what they're estimating.
That's going to weigh a bit.
It could be a little bit more, could be a little bit less, but my assumption is that this is a product that's going to cost somewhere between $130 and $150 when it's actually available.
But it's going to be a thing of beauty.
It's going to be a thing of beauty, and I'm not sure where I'm going to be able to put it once I get it and build it, but I'll find a place.
You think the price will rocket with Brexit?
Oh, shut up, Muller. Jesus. Sorry about that, fellas. Sorry about that, listeners. Though it dreads me to think, Muller, what the hell have you picked?
I gave you a link earlier. It's my new monitor, the Samsung U28E85R 28-inch LED 4K monitor.
Snappy title. Why is it so good?
Because it's brilliant.
It's just it's clear 4K. And gorgeous. And
oh, yeah. It's absolutely... It's better than my iMac.
So here's the thing, though. From 24 to 28 inches, it's only £40 an inch. Yeah? 369 to 400.
Yeah, it's not much more for the 32 bar.
It's only £10 an inch.
Yeah. But it's £400 up to the 32.
£10 an inch. From 28 to 32, it's £100 an inch.
I know. But I couldn't.
Wow.
Yeah, that's a bit of a rip-off.
I thought the 28 was about the... so it's big enough for the 22. But it's got a nice stand. You can raise it up and down and tilt it and swivel it. And it's gorgeous. I've still got to set up the colours properly, though, because...
£800 seems about right as well for it, though. Unless 32? You buy a 40-inch telly at 421, but you won't get the refresh rates on that.
Yeah, well, it was a bit too rich for me. I think the 28 was the sweet spot.
Yeah, no.
Personally.
So they're all that kind of price.
And it comes with all the cables. It comes with your two HDMI cables, the mini and the large, and the DVI, and comes with a USB hub cable, so you can use the... It's got a built-in USB hub. So it's not too bad.
Nice.
Excellent. My cool thing, it's kind of come out a bit on the Mac show already. Have you heard about the reversible USB?
Mm.
Yeah, where this end here is reversible. There we go. Hopefully I can get it close enough that it can focus. There we go. So you can get a reversible USB, and I got sent a grey one of these. This was the Mark 1, this is not the Mark 1, this is the Mark 2, because the Mark 2 not only has that end as reversible, it has this end as reversible as well as. So it is a completely reversible USB cable. And I've forgotten the name of the firm.
Mitig.
So does the part in the middle move? Has
yeah,
got
it flexes
an element of movement.
Ever so slightly. Which means that if you turn it the other way up, it just flexes it back in the other direction. Now, how strong that will be for the future, I don't know, but it feels pretty good, and it feels like it's meant to be flexible, so that you get that contact issue with it as well. And I'm hoping Muller's looking up the name of the...
I am, because I bought it.
Yeah, I've forgotten the sodding name. It begins with an M, I know that much.
It's Mick-Pick or something, or Mick-something. Hold on a minute, yeah. I'm just looking for it. Not to move that out.
But it's the wholly reversible. This is the version 2 one. There's a version 1, which is just the thin end, but the version 2 one is both ends are completely reversible, and it's awesome. It plugs in and out of USB 3 without a problem, and the other end works just as good as all the other stuff did. So if you're in and out each night trying to, you know, fit stuff in the dark in your bedroom, start plugging stuff in to recharge and that kind of thing, it's brilliant. I've got the one that's grey that I was given up at home for recharging my Mofi juice pack, because it's a micro USB
flip.
And I don't want to do
Mick flip.
The Mick flip. There we go, Mac flip. Mick flip reversible micro USB cable. Version 1 and version 2, you get the version 1 one, then you only get the small end that's reversible. The version 2 one is both ends are reversible. And I've got to say as well, the Ring doorbell. I had so much fun with the Ring doorbell. This is a video of my wife unpacking her car, and I'm in a meeting room with a colleague or a customer, and saying,
hello.
No, I'm showing the Ring doorbell, and this is what's going on my drive at the moment. He went, really? I said, yeah, and I can even talk to her.
Hello.
I pressed the talk button and said, hello, I'm sitting here with this chap showing him this thing, and she came over and she told me, piss off.
Isn't that just love?
And Ewan, the Ring doorbell, am I right in thinking that can either wire into your existing wiring, or that can work off a rechargeable battery?
No, you don't need a rechargeable battery. The unit itself is rechargeable.
Unit.
Actually, technically, I think if you drilled your holes right, you could end up just putting a USB in it, a micro USB, and actually and actually
just have it powered all the time
off the USB from a plug as normal. But yeah, if you've got an existing chime bell that's got the two wires coming out, you haven't got to worry about positive and negative or anything like that. Mm. One on the other. Put that in, do them up, and that's it. It's wired in on your old bell.
My doorbell's fully wireless, so I don't have any wiring to it at the moment. I don't really have anywhere that it would easily go to a socket. I'm thinking the fact that the unit's rechargeable still might be worth a look.
Yeah, I don't know how long it lasts, but it does. On your app on your phone, it tells you how long the battery's is in the thing, in the doorbell unit. But it's got two retaining screws at the bottom to stop people stealing it. But you undo those retaining screws, and then you just lift it up and pull it out, go and take it inside and stick it on a charger and then put it back in. But if you've got a little power supply somewhere nearby, then it wouldn't be hard to wire it into that dead easy. Yeah.
After you shared the link in the Slack room the other day, I was having a look at the Ring website, and there's mention on there that Ring say if your doorbell is stolen, they will replace it free of charge.
Is that right?
That's what it says on their site.
That's good.
Well, that's really good then. It's £130 to £150 where you can get it. The other one that I showed on the Mac show was I had Amazon came right. And I said to the guy, could you just stick it in the green bin, please, because I'm not able to come to the door at the moment. He said, yeah, no problem. And then I actually caught him back on the drive a little bit later, having a furtle around in the bin. And I said, sorry, mate, what are you doing? And he said, oh, I had to rescan the barcode. All right, okay, mate. And it's got a motion sensor on it as well as. So you can see when people are coming onto your drive and when they you get a motion thing come up on your phone, and that's it. And I've been out with this week working, and Royal Mail tried to deliver a parcel. I just answered the phone, and it comes through, the audio comes through your car audio speaker as well. So you can just say, hi mate, I'm sorry I can't get to the door, could you give it next door, or could you put it up to number 30, or could you put it in the green bin or the brown bin or whatever, and ask them to do that. And they don't know that you're not there. And one of the I did speak to a Virgin Media guy, because they're trying to fix it, but they're not doing very well at the moment. And he said, okay, but I could do this. I said, I'm not even there. I'm in Oxford at the moment. And he was like, wow. And he was taken aback that I was able to talk to him on a doorbell from Oxford.
I'm hovering over the buy now button right now.
Oh, you're wasting your time, mate. Just buy it. I've started off the review. I've started writing the review. I'm going to post it this weekend. And the review starts, if they think they're getting this back, they're sadly mistaken. I'm going to need a court order before I give this up. It is brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. Where can we get a hold of you, Mr. Campion?
I'm Campion UK on Twitter. Normally on the Big Show. Occasionally on the Mac Show. And loitering in the Slack room most days.
Excellent. Jeff Ray?
I'm hanging out over at macobserver.com, and that's where I do the TMO Daily Observations and Apple Context Machine podcasts, and I'm on Fresh Brewed Tales. That's my own personal blog where I talk about the ridiculous things I see people do in coffee shops. And then you can find me on Twitter and Instagram. I'm Jay Gamut both places.
Excellent. Muller, where are you?
Muller Biker on Twitter. I'm also on Instagram, but I wouldn't look at my posts, so no. I'm also in the Slack room, mostly trying to rob up the Slack Nazi the wrong way.
That would be Camps. And we've also got a veggie Nazi now.
Oh, yeah.
Which he's
going to pay for that.
Well, you do know as well, right, that I was telling him what you were saying in here.
Was you?
Yeah.
I told you he was taking a mickey.
Yeah, but I was telling him, you've got him, mate. You've got him. Keep going. He's like, oh, I should stop before I upset him. No, keep going. Give him a taste of his own medicine.
Yeah, but I even said, it's on it. You can check the thing. I said, he's taking a mick.
But I told him to keep pushing, and you were caught in the end, mate.
Oh,
taste
yeah.
Taste your own medicine there, matey.
Well, the trouble is, I didn't want you to upset him.
My name's Ewan Rankin. You can get me at Ewan Rankin on Twitter. Max Show and Big Show will be back next week on Friday as normal. And we'll have a pile of fun. And it's only 11 months to the bash next week.
That's awesome.
Sorry, it's less than, it's nearly 10 actually.
You're talking to two people, it didn't turn up.
I know. They'll be coming though. They'll definitely be coming. No one's missing out this week. See you soon. Thanks for listening.
Bye.
See ya.